Unconventional Life, the show where twice a week I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creatives, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. Each of these individuals are at the top of their game in terms of revenue and reach in their respective industry, living life in the driver's seat beyond what is traditional or predictable. On this show, you will learn how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck.
It means living a life of passion and purpose.
And what would it look like if you create it from the ground up?
Everything that's shown up in my business has been a place for me to grow or expand as a human being.
I pretty much get paid to be me.
Very frequently, the exact things you think are against you might be the things that are actually the reason you can make it.
I'm your host, Jewel Schroeder.
If you would like to win this week's prize giveaway from our show guests featuring free access to their online courses, books, and other impactful tools to help you on the path to living an unconventional life, simply subscribe to the podcast on iTunes now and go to unconventionallifeshow.com to let us know you did. You can also get a second entry by leaving us an iTunes review.
Unconventional Life, welcome. This is your host, Jewel Schroeder, tuning in from Boulder, Colorado. We've got a special guest joining us, Eric Finnegan, in the house. Eric, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
Yeah.
Awesome. So Eric is a professional copywriter and launch strategist. He has worked on campaigns that have generated upwards of six figures in just a matter of days. He is master at split testing, everything launch related. So for those of you that have written into the show wanting to talk to an expert in the realm of marketing launches, this is your guy. He is also the consultant for Million Dollar Companies. But what I love about Eric is not too long ago, he was working a 9-to-5 in New York City, managing a $36 billion real estate portfolio as an investment strategist. So we're going to get into all of those details and how Eric made that transition in just a few moments. But with that being said, Eric, welcome to the show. Fill in any gaps I might have left out and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
Yeah, I think you pretty much captured it. Yeah.
Awesome. So, as I said in the introduction, you went from being in this 9-to-5, investment strategist background, VP of that company, and moved into, having your own marketing agency, Autopilot Email. But what was it like for you, if we go back years in time growing up? What was it like in grade school and high school? Did you always have this passion for writing? Tell us about what it was like.
Yeah. So thinking back, I was always kind of holding an identity for myself as an outsider. I didn't make a lot of friends in high school or college, like in this school environment. I was always like off doing my own thing. Playing in bands, doing other creative things, where I met most of my friends that I still have. It was like the creativity and the social aspect that the sort of like traditional route of meeting friends through school and that sort of thing never really like landed for me. It never really spoke. So I would always be on the search for some other new way to have fun and ended up making friends that way. And sort of getting this creative outlet. I grew up in a really small town, so it made it really hard. Like my town didn't have a stoplight. Like we had one grocery store, we had like the auto repair shop, but really not much else. So it made like the not fitting in aspect of growing up a lot harder than I think what might have been if I lived in like a bigger city, for example. But I'm realizing now that was actually like it was a good thing because it really pushed me to go outside my comfort zone, pushed me to go outside my like just small bubble of where I was at that time and look elsewhere, look outside.
Yeah, I love that. So most writers are introverts, I would say, in my experience. And I'm wondering like if you identify with that, of being an introvert or, were you shy growing up? What was it like for you?
Yeah, I think definitely I'm 100% introvert. So that means for me, like I don't necessarily not enjoy socializing with people, and I don't like being like a loner, but it's very draining. Like, it takes a lot of energy for me to go out and be social with people. And also, like, from that place, I've sort of, like, it helped me, like, I think fueled this, like, outsider identity that I had. So I'd see, like, people in my school and, like, people around me talking about all the fun they would have in, you know, in groups and hanging out at each other's houses and things like that. And I just never really had that. I was always, like, playing computer games by myself or learning musical instruments by myself. And the other thing is I've always had difficulty, like, expressing myself verbally. So just the simple act of talking with people, I found very challenging. And I would walk away from interactions with people and think, wait, what the hell did I just say to them? What was I talking about? So yeah, so there's those two things, introversion and, like, wondering, like, as if what I'm speaking about is actually making sense and imagining that it actually doesn't, has definitely, like, pushed me into writing or, like, wanting to do writing very well. So it's a way of explaining what's going on in my head, like, expressing myself in a way that I can be very, like, very clear, very, like, succinct. And if what I write doesn't make sense, I can go back and revise it before they see it.
Yeah. Yeah. So how is it going for you right now being on the podcast and expressing yourself, through words?
It's challenging. There's a lot going on in my head right now of, like, oh, do I want to talk about this thing? Do I want to talk about that thing? What's the bigger picture lesson I can help land here? And so there's all that going on. And then, like, I'm noticing the process of, like, trying to pick out the most important things. And I don't know. I don't actually know if it's landing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's sort of this uncertainty here.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your vulnerability in sharing with us. And, you know, I think as you've shared, like, growing up and making the transitions where, you know, now you do get on the phone and you do talk to and close these companies, you know, that have do millions of dollars a year in revenue. And so obviously from where you were growing up and still are, some of those themes of, like, how do I get the words right? What have been some things that you've done or some tools that anyone that's listening that might identify themselves as an introvert or might be like, yeah, I totally struggle getting my words out. You're totally speaking my language right now. Like, what might you recommend for anyone that might be in that boat that's listening?
There's a couple things. So one, I would just say, like, slow down. Slow down to whatever pace you need to go at to feel expressed. And this has been an ongoing practice for me, like, noticing if I'm going faster than I want to in my speaking and consciously just slowing down. So you'll notice maybe some pauses as I speak or stretching my words out. And this is me, like, actually slowing down and getting in touch with, what do I actually want to share here? And what do I think, or what is really true for me in the moment? So one is slowing down. Two, what's really helped cultivate that process for me and help cultivate that awareness is 100% for sure meditation on a daily basis. And there's really easy ways of getting started. I started using an app called Headspace, another one called Calm. Those are two really easy ways to get into it. But basically, like, what meditation does for me is, yeah, cultivating this mindfulness of what's actually going on in my current in the moment experience of maybe feeling anxious or, like, these, like, racing thoughts or these scrambled ideas that are in my head. Sort of rather than being immersed in that, I can now have the ability to, like, step outside and witness it and observe it, rather than being just fully immersed in this, like, anxious feeling or these like scrambled ideas that I don't know if they're getting out clearly. And then sort of like there's like a downward spiraling dynamic there if I don't sort of step out for a second. So to meditation for sure. Those are probably the two things I would share.
Yeah. And how long do you meditate? I know like some people think that meditating has to be this like super long intentional practice. And I'm wondering for someone that's listening that maybe hasn't meditated before or that might have been like turned off by the idea of meditation, what you could recommend for someone looking to get started.
Yeah. So it can be as little as a minute or 30 seconds. I started actually doing 2 minutes a day for a week. That was like, I had heard for all these things, these are really good benefits about meditation, and I wanted them. And I tried sitting down once for like 10 or 15 minutes and it's just like, I can't do this. This doesn't work for me. And then I think in one of those apps, Headspace or Calm, there's a timer for 2 minutes. You can literally just sit for 2 minutes. And that was my commitment. I was going to do it for 2 minutes a day for a week, no matter what. And so I did that, just 2 minutes a day, focusing on the breath. And after a week, I started to like, this isn't really that bad. So I upped it to 5 minutes a day, and then 10, and 15. And now I do 20 minutes a day. But actually this morning, after I did my morning meditation, I did something, an experiment where I ate breakfast while meditating. I like focused on every bite I was eating. This is like the first time I did it actually this morning. And it was a really, really good experience. Like I slowed down, I chewed one at a time. I like felt the like sensation of chewing and felt the sensation of swallowing before taking another bite. And like meditation doesn't have to necessarily look like you're sitting down in a dark room and just breathing. It can be done at any moment of the day. Just like, hold on, like pay attention to what's going on here. Put your attention on the breath or your physical movement or your chewing. It could be anything. Yeah. So 2 minutes a day.
Yeah. Awesome. Such good advice. So let's flash forward into your story where I know, you know, like you said, you grew up in Syracuse, small town, upstate New York. Went to college, got your degree in environmental policy, and then your master's in economics. And so how was it for you in school and then transitioning into this, essentially, you know, being an investment strategist, you were a writer doing a different style of writing than you obviously are with your current business. But did you know when you decided to go to college that you were going to go into investment strategy? Or tell us a little bit about how you were able to, like, did you see the future clearly, or how did that part of your journey unfold up until the VP of that last company?
Yeah. So I'm going to try and keep this like to the high level because I can really get down into the weeds really quickly, and I'd rather not do that. Basically, my undergrad was following, my experience in undergrad was definitely following just like my natural curiosities. So I started off in computer science actually because I really wanted to learn programming and engineering and software and things like that. And I was really good at math in high school. But then I realized, actually, I don't want to spend 40 years of my life sitting in front of a computer for 8 hours a day. From there, I was like realizing, oh, actually, I love being outside. I love nature. I love natural and physical sciences. I love some of the politics and sort of things like that involved in policymaking. So really, I was just curious about that. So I spent the rest of my undergrad years doing that purely out of curiosity. In the meantime, while I was doing that, I was actually playing in a band, a punk band at the time, and we were doing a bunch of touring. So once I graduated college, I actually went on tour with them for about 6 months. And it was a great experience, everything like that, but we didn't make any money. Actually, I ended up pretty far in debt as a result of it. So when we got home from those 6 months of tour, all my bank accounts were empty. My credit cards were maxed out. I was just on empty. And I sort of had like this come to Jesus moment of like, holy cow, like I just went through college. I, in theory, should be set or comfortable financially. Like, what's going on? So from there, it was a kind of a moment of panic where I realized I have to make money now. I have to transition out of this like fun touring musician lifestyle and make money. I'm looking back on that as like, man, like I'm in such a different place now and have such a different mindset around it. But that was where I was at the time. Like I was panicking about money. So I ended up, when I was moving to San Francisco, I was looking for jobs. One of the job postings I saw kind of like asked for someone involved or someone interested in urban planning, which I was. And it was like this real estate economics research job. So I, pure luck, the day I moved to San Francisco, I got the job offer and just worked with them for about 6 or 7 years. And eventually like got to the point of like, okay, I can do something with this. I can create a career around this and do really, really well. Like there's, I can be very comfortable financially if I just stay in this career. And that was what I was wanting. I was wanting like low risk, no risk, really good money kind of job. So I went back to grad school as a way of moving further up the ladder. I wouldn't have gotten promoted to the level I was if I didn't have a grad degree. So I basically got one in the field where I was working, which is economics. And yeah, spent a couple of years doing that and then climbing up the ladder a little bit further. Got a new job as this VP of this investment strategist position. And yeah, I'm realizing it all started from that moment of panic of like, okay, I have to actually make money now.
Yeah. So I imagine like, you know, I'm not too long ago since I had graduated college back in 2011. And for a lot of our listeners, that feeling is familiar. It's like, okay, I followed all the steps. I just kept doing the next thing. And then you find yourself in like this come to Jesus moment of like, I'm in the real world. What does that look like? And for you, it took that summer to actually come back and be like, credit cards are maxed out. I'm in debt. What's next? And for you to then take that action and say, okay, I want something that's going to be low risk, safe, essentially get to the top over, you know, 7 years time plus as the career as the investment strategist to which you're now VP managing a $36 billion portfolio. Some might look at you and be like, wow, you totally made it. Like you did it, you know, you killed it. But it sounds like you had a moment at some point in there where you were like, there's got to be more. And you pivoted into entrepreneurship. And so what was that moment and how did you get started? And specifically from the lens of anyone that's listening that might have been in your shoes while you were at the top of that ladder and that might have their own ideas of transitioning, like what was your turning point?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So the turning point was, just a little bit before the turning point, actually, I realized I saw where I was going in my job. Like I was promoted to VP. I was like the youngest VP at my company. It was actually the second time I had been promoted to VP in two different companies. And so like the trajectory was pretty clear for me. I just stay doing my job, stay like doing it, continue doing it really well and stay really dedicated and I'll keep moving up. And like the next step above me was my boss's job. And the step above him was his boss's job. And I would sit in my desk, I remember in New York, and think, do I really want this? Do I actually want this? Is this the life that I really want? It was like this moment of like, okay, I had succeeded in what I was wanting to do, which is have pretty much autonomy in the job that I was doing, pretty much free to like pursue opportunities as I saw them. So it was almost like pretty entrepreneurial in that position. But the thing that I was working toward, it turned out, was not the thing that I was actually wanting. It wasn't the thing that was fulfilling me. So I got there, I got to this position, I saw the things ahead of me, and I'm thinking, is this really fulfilling? And the answer was clearly no. And what happened then, and when I kind of got to that realization, it started a really dark period actually in my life because I had been working like really, really, really hard, sacrificing like a lot, social life, sacrificing relationships in some cases, moving around the country, you know, starting in San Francisco and then moving to New York, like all within, to take jobs and like, keep moving up, and realizing that those decisions that I made to be fulfilled were not ultimately fulfilling me. So I spent a while like sort of soul searching, like, what do I want in this life? Do I actually want to be sitting at a desk? Do I care about making X amount of dollars a year? Do I care about living in a really good apartment in New York? And the answer on all those was no. And then like, it was really startling, because then it's like, wait, what do I actually care about? What are the things that I want to be working toward? What is the life that I want? And so, yeah, so I got to like this point of just like, okay, now what? And yeah, it was a pretty dark period for a while. And what the shift was and what the turning point was, is that like realizing that I can literally do anything I want. Anything I've proven to myself that, you know, time and time again, that when I put my eyes on a goal, that I work toward achieving it. And if it doesn't end up in that specific outcome that I'm looking for, something really powerful and really fulfilling happens along the way. So I remember sitting down at my kitchen table one morning before going to work and just like writing out all the things that really make me happy. One of them thinking like, oh, I can do a business on my own and earn a living like on my terms. Number two is like making people laugh. So I started writing down jokes, I remember. And like just this process, I actually continued doing this for like every day for about a week. Like what makes me happy? And I was just finding that creating these pathways or these sort of connections in my brain, that there are things that make me happy, there are things that make me feel fulfilled, like was the turning point. And it gave me the motivation of like, okay, I can put all the energy I've been putting toward the corporate ladder and making a lot of money, and I can put that toward actually creating my life that I want.
Yeah, love that. So I love that you're highlighting that. And I'm curious, you know, after having this realization, this turning point of knowing there's more, wanting to make this transition, how exactly did you start to put that into practice? Because it's one thing to see something and have a realization, and then it's another thing to get into the trenches and to start putting those things into action. So what were some steps that you took after noticing that turning point inside of you?
Yeah, so I really kind of started from a place of like, oh crap, now what do I do? Not really knowing where to go or like what to do, how to make this happen, like how to turn my office job into, you know, my life of an office job to something I was enjoying. And it really took, I think, listening to a lot of different podcasts and hearing stories of other people that did it, made a similar transition, that gave me one, the motivation and like the reassurance that, yeah, like this is possible. And also realizing that the people that made the transition like I wanted to didn't do it alone. So they actually had help, and learned from people that, you know, did it before them even. So there was this kind of like shift from I can generate it or I should be able to generate it all myself to a place of almost humility that, yeah, I have the work ethic and the drive and the raw talent to make it happen. And if I don't ask for help, then I'm really just kind of setting myself back. I'm not giving myself the full, like, the full experience of the opportunity that's at hand. So asking for help is actually like pretty hard for me. You know, it's a matter of pride that I can figure things out on my own and spend a little bit of time getting, you know, into the weeds and coming out on the other side as an expert on something. And I also realize that takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time and dedication. And I was wanting to make the shift happen much faster. I wasn't wanting to like go through a a formal education of entrepreneurship or anything like that, or like a year-long or years-long mentorship. I was really looking for something accelerated, a way, like a, almost like a formula that I could just plug in and spend my time, you know, fulfilling on. And in my, you know, various, you know, research and kind of exposing myself to a lot of different things, I ended up coming across a 6-month program called The Foundation. I heard about it on one of the podcasts that I was listening to, and it really spoke to me. It hit on a bunch of the different issues I was coming across in trying to make the leap. You know, I've been trying to start businesses actually on the side for quite a while, and none of them were taking off. And what they were promising was that at the end of the 6 months, you'll have a business idea, or you'll have a business with a paying customer without actually having an idea to start. So I went, you know, I went in head first and just kind of spent almost all my free time over those 6 months doing that foundation work.
Yeah, so good. So as you were doing the foundation, you were starting these different, you know, business ventures, taking these ideas while working, you know, VP of this fund. So how did you manage the two of those? And at what point in juggling both did you finally decide to walk into the office and say, hey, guys, this has been fun, but I'm out?
Yeah, it's a funny image. The juggling really does fit. Like, I was getting up early, like several hours earlier than I needed to every day. Like, I would set my alarm at, I think, 5:30, wake up then, do a meditation, eat breakfast, and then just work on my side stuff until I left for the office at 8:30 or so. And then I would do work on my lunch break. That's actually how I started learning copywriting, is on my lunch breaks. And then after work also. So I would be spending 4 to 5 or 6 hours a day, in addition to my, you know, 9 or 10 hour a day job, on this stuff. So, you know, I there's a lot about like work-life balance and how to achieve work-life balance and get what you really want. Like, for me, it didn't look like work-life balance. It was just like fulfilling on the obligations that I have, meaning my job that I'm getting paid for, and then go all in head first, on what I'm actually wanting to create. So I was wanting to do it fast, and I had to set aside some of my free time and, you know, leisure activities. But it was really a matter of like, what do I actually want here?
Yeah. So how did you decide it was time to walk in to your office, and you walked up to your boss and to leave?
Yeah. So this is like a really like one of the, probably the biggest mindset shifts I've had around, like entrepreneurship versus having a job. Like, the difference between creating value and creating paychecks is that these moments of growth or these moments of advancement never happen linearly. It's never a linear path, at least in my experience. And I was expecting a linear path. I was expecting, like, from my career, my corporate career type path of like every 2 years, get a promotion, at the end of the year, get a bonus. And I think I went into this, the entrepreneurship world and starting my own business, like with that same mindset of like, okay, just like plug away for 3 months and you'll get your first paying customer, and another 3 months and you'll get your fifth paying customer. And then, you know, sort of the linear, the step by step by step, and it would just happen. And that results would be, you could see them ahead of time. And I wasn't seeing it. I wasn't seeing it happen. So, and it was really frustrating to sort of have those two realities like really butt heads. So ultimately, like I from talking with some people and realizing from my own experience that that life and business are completely nonlinear and completely like chaotic. Like, how can I use that? How can I come from that mindset and then actually create the results that I want from that mindset rather than this linear mindset? So for me, it just looked like, okay, I have to light a fire under myself. Like, I have to give myself sort of life or death circumstances, like survival or not. And I was realizing that this, you know, six figure, like very comfortable salary I was earning was keeping me behind, was slowing me down. So it was just a matter of like, okay, this is dead weight. It has to go. I'm ready to make the move. If I try it and fail, like it'll still be a success in my book because, I'm actually going for it.
Yeah. And how long did you sit with that decision before you actually pulled the trigger?
I had been wanting like it, I had come to the realization, I think back in like last summer. So probably a few months. And like, it was still there and I was sort of realizing it was like, okay, like I've made the decision to act and I still haven't acted. Like, what's going on? And then what it actually was I was going through the Landmark Forum and the advanced course. And if you've, anybody that's been through those knows that like, okay, so you like, I don't want to give away the, give away the nugget, but like everything is self-generated, right? That I had to come to from that place of, if it's not going to happen, or if I don't do it, it's not going to happen. So like, if there's no urgency on my end, like no one's going to create it for me. So I, it was the weekend after I went through this Landmark advanced course. You know, the last class was, I think, on a Sunday. I walked into my boss's office on Monday before lunch and told him.
Yeah. I remember, you know, you sharing that at the time with me of when that had happened and just the amount of work that it took to get there. And I know you had highlighted like the Landmark Forum, the Landmark Advanced Course. And for those that aren't listening, awesome seminars that exist worldwide. I've done them. So many of people in our network have done them. But I know you were doing a few other things as well. And I just, you know, our listeners love to know the goods. And you're like, I don't want to give away the nugget, but like, you could be generous here.
Okay.
So what, either with that particular nugget or what are a few other nuggets that helped you like specifically with doing the work on yourself so that you were ready to actually, you know, arrive at that point?
So one of the biggest things I picked up in the Landmark Forum is this distinction of like stories that that we create. There's like the events and then the story that we create around them. And sort of what I worked on after that is sort of separating like things that happen, events, like circumstances that I'm in from the stories that I've created about them. So when I observe something or observe something happening in my life and I come to form an opinion about that, having that distinction has now given me choice. Okay, so do I want to accept the story that's there or do I want to create a whole new story? Do I want to create a story that's empowering versus one that's disempowering? And, you know, most of the time I'm going to choose one that's empowering. Okay. So that's one thing. And I'm struggling a little bit to bring it back to this particular thing. I guess what I want to say is, from doing the Landmark Forum and advanced course, kind of what I realize is that like the meaning of life is what I make it. Okay. So there's no intrinsic value or there's no intrinsic meaning of life. It's what I make it. Okay. And part of the work in the forum and the advanced course is demolishing all of the stories around life that I've created. Okay. And then from that place of nothingness and blankness and blank slate, I can create anything I want. So that was where I was at the end of the advanced course, is like realizing that my life is a complete blank slate and I can create anything I want.
Yeah. So good. So let's flash forward. Let's talk about your business and you as a copywriter. So it's been, you know, almost about a year or so, and you have been working on some big clients. You know, you've consulting these multimillion-dollar companies, and a lot of the work that you do, you produce these, you know, six-figure in sales in a matter of days for your clients. And so copywriting for any entrepreneur is a big foundation, and you more than anyone can obviously speak to that. But I would love for you to share, what do you see in your world of copywriting? What makes good copywriting, and why, you know, like if you could offer a nugget from your experience to those that are listening, what do you think people should know?
That's a really good question. It's a really big question. I'll say what I think sort of was a concept that was kind of a game changer for me when I picked it up, in changing or in going from writing the way I had been writing to writing in a way that sells stuff or persuades people and really connects with people on an emotional level. So I like to think of two different ways of communicating with people. There's direct and there's indirect. Okay. So it's you can hear the words that I'm telling you, and I can teach you explicitly what I want you to learn. Okay. So I can tell you that, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. And that's like a way of communicating. And the world that I came from of writing and coming up with these like strategy, complex investment strategies for this real estate fund, that was very like educational writing, like 1 + 1 = 2. Okay, so job growth is growing, so buy real estate. It was very, very direct in that way. Moving over into the copywriting world and the more direct response and persuasive writing, it's not as direct, okay? But it's connecting. The goal of it is connecting with people on an emotional level and persuading them that what you're offering is the thing that they already want, okay? And there's ways of doing that, okay, that are not necessarily, I think, well known or well practiced. One of them is to speak or write in a way that you speak. Okay. So when I read marketing copy, that's really compelling and it's really good and it's magnetic and inspiring. It sounds like when I read it along, I can hear the person's voice who wrote it and I can hear them speaking directly to me. This is actually what happens. Okay. So this is like the mark of really good copy is if you can hear the person talking, to you. Okay. So why that's, or how I guess maybe the question is how to cultivate that skill. Okay. And to get there, I would, you know, what I did is look at, basically, sales materials and sales letters that worked really well in the past. Okay. To see how people are actually writing. And see how people are using language to persuade, okay? And there's endless materials out there to learn this stuff. You just type in an old copywriter's name into Google and you'll find a bunch of their work. Gary Halbert, John Carlton, Gene Schwartz. And what I did on my lunch break is find their stuff and copy it by hand. Like find an old sales letter and copy it by hand. Some of them I did 10 times in a row just to get sort of like learning a musical instrument. Like I learned to play guitar by playing along in my favorite bands. And I learned copywriting by hand copying along with copywriters that have sold billions of dollars worth of stuff. Okay, so the nugget here is to, one, write in a way that's natural. So write in a way that you speak and write in a way that's from your heart. And the other nugget is to follow formulas of what's worked in the past. You don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. So I love that. And I imagine that ties a lot into the success behind these launch campaigns that you're doing. So what is it that has the campaigns that you're doing? I know a lot of listeners, like we're doing product launches. And what makes yours so successful?
That's a really good question. So I can speak from experience on the last one I'm working on right now. Actually, the launch is still live and it's outperforming the previous iterations of the launch by tenfold or more. And one thing I noticed that's something it's a key guiding principle around my work is to not just sell people. You're not walking up door to door people and selling them a new vacuum cleaner. Okay. And in previous launches of my client right now, that's, they've sold this product a few different times in the past, and it's, you know, our current launch is basically like outperforming it like incredibly. Is that in the past they were walking up to people's doors and selling them a vacuum cleaner, so to speak. Okay. They were sending them emails saying, we have this thing for sale. It's this price. Find out what's in it on this webinar. And here are some success stories. Okay. And that might have worked in the past. Okay. But what works now is to come across in a way that's you're actually giving people value at every point along the way. Okay. So it looks like before the product launch is actually live, before people actually buy it, you're going to be educating people. Okay. So maybe the thing that you're selling, maybe the problem that you're solving, maybe your prospects and your audience doesn't even realize it's a problem. Okay. So the first step for me is to, if it's actually a problem, if the product that I'm selling has integrity, it's going to be solving people's problems. But I think a lot of the times people or products, sellers or like entrepreneurs in particular think there's a fallacy that their audience already knows that this pain that they're solving is painful. Okay. So you can use stories and quizzes and other techniques to help your audience realize or to agitate the problem that what they're experiencing in their life is actually painful. And your job as a marketer and as a writer and as an entrepreneur is to show people that their life can be better. There's an alternative. There's another pasture out there where the grass is greener.
Yeah. I love that. And I know you use a lot of split testing in the headlines that you write, the email subject lines. So if you could speak to what you do when you're doing split testing and what exactly, you know, you're looking for, especially in email campaigns when you're doing it.
Yeah. So this is a really good question. So one of the things I've noticed is a lot of my clients aren't very statistically literate. Okay. So you can say, oh, they got, you know, 25% open rate, and they'll split test something and they get, you know, 26% open rate, and they say that, oh, that's 26% is a winner. And it doesn't really work like that. Okay. So one thing I look for is statistically significant differences. So if it's, there's formulas to do that, but 26% versus 25% in most cases, in a lot of cases I've seen, it's not really a valid, you can't really get any insight from that. Okay. To me, that's pretty similar. So there's one end of like how to actually read the statistics and how to like gain insight from statistics. Okay. And with that, you need this like numerical literacy that a lot of people don't have. So if you have it, that's a huge differentiating factor. And it's a huge skill to have. The second piece. Okay. So actually what I want to be doing every time I'm split testing is testing an assumption I have about the audience. Okay. In most cases, it's their awareness level. Okay. So if I'm starting a product launch or I'm sending out one email to a list, one of the biggest questions I can answer is what is their awareness level? Like, do they know that my client is selling this product at this certain price, or are they on the opposite end of the spectrum where they're totally cold, meaning they don't know anything about my client. They don't even know that the thing that they're selling is an option for them. And they don't know that the problem that it solves is actually a problem. So it goes from completely unaware to most aware. And I want to test where along the awareness level they are. So if it's something like, I would come up with headlines or subject lines to test that, like which one gets a higher response rate. Is it talking about when I talk about the product itself, or is it when I talk about the pain that the product solves, or is it something else? Is this making sense?
Yeah, totally. So could you give us like a specific example of like two headlines that you might use to represent each end of the spectrum?
Sure. Putting me on the spot here. Let's see. So one headline is like, let's say I'm selling a widget. Okay. So one headline I could test is widget on sale, 30% off for the next 3 hours. Okay. Another headline I might test with that is if the widget solves, let's say it reduces late payments on invoices by 50% or something like that. Another headline I might test for that is talking about the pain. Okay, so the pain is that the late invoices are collected late and it costs people money. Okay, it costs people time and money. So I might ask a question of how late are your invoices, or what's your average collection window? I'm not getting any of the jargon right here, but some way of agitating the pain. So if I'm reading it and I'm thinking, oh, I have this problem of I collect invoices on average 45 days after they're sent out, and there's somebody telling me that, like, talking about that specifically. So the headline might be something like, reduce your invoice collection, or are you interested in reducing your invoice collection time from 45 days down to 20 days or something like that?
Yeah. Cool. I love that. And then as you're reading your results, it's kind of gauging, you know, where they're at in the spectrum. Then I imagine you can write your marketing campaigns and things like that from that perspective. Is that
Exactly. So if I find that the list or the audience is responding to the first headline of like my widget for 30% off for the next 3 hours and not responding to the second widget as much, that means that they're totally aware that they're aware that my client is selling this thing and they're interested in buying it. And now there's a great opportunity to do it. Okay. So they already have the demand. The demand is already there. On the flip side, if they get more response from the agitating the problem headline, then they might not even know that my client is selling his or her widget.
Yeah, love that. So I imagine we could dive so much deeper into all this stuff. And you've actually got a course that talks about all this that we'll be giving away a copy at the end, and we'll share that right after the rapid fire round as a giveaway to one of our listeners. So let's move into the last part of our show. This is the rapid fire round. Series of random questions. Are you ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Awesome. What is one belief about yourself that you have had to give up along the way in order to find the success that you had?
One belief I've had to give up is that I need to be perfect.
Mm. Love that. Next question. If you could turn back time and give a piece of advice to your 20-year-old self that you know now, what would you say to him?
A couple things I'd say: get off your computer, learn to talk to people, and learn sales.
Love that. Next question. For anyone that might be new to the realm of digital marketing, what is one tool that you use that you feel like sums it up for someone wanting to get started in the realm of like landing page build outs and email campaigns and integrations, something that's really easy for someone that doesn't have much experience? What's one tool that you'd recommend?
One tool I'd recommend, building simple landing pages is like a super good skill to have. And the tool I always use is Instapage. So you can create one in 5 or 10 minutes, create a really good one in a couple hours. And you can split test and do all the mobile. You can create mobile responsive landing pages on the fly also.
Yeah, I love that. Next question. What is one common mistake that you notice amongst people in the relationship to copywriting and what it is or isn't?
So I noticed, the biggest mistake I think people make is that they write about themselves. They write about their product as if people give a crap. And the truth is that no one does. No one cares about them and no one cares about their product. And that's okay. Okay. So the way to fix that is to talk to the audience, talk about them, talk about their problems, their lives, what's possible for them. And if you can, leave yourself out of it as much as you can.
Yeah. Love that.
I want to end that. So like your personal story can actually be very powerful, but there comes a point where like it gets disconnecting. I think people tune that out sometimes.
Yeah. So I'm imagining there's like a eloquency of bringing the two together where you're not indulging too much of yourself or pushing too much of yourself on it and leaving room for them to see themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. Last question. What does living an unconventional life mean to you?
Living an unconventional life means like making my own rules or making my own life the way I want it, creating from a blank slate.
Awesome. So Eric, thanks so much for joining us. So tell us a little bit about the giveaway. For those that are listening, every episode we have a giveaway from our guest. And I know yours is around this copywriting course, giving a free copy to it to one of our listeners. So tell us a little bit about the course and what they'll learn in it.
So this is a funny little story. So this is a game for me. I put up a Facebook post once as a total joke. And part of my sense of humor is that not a lot of people realize I'm being funny. They think I'm being serious. So I put up a post on Facebook about a month ago, a month and a half ago now, saying that I was launching a copywriting course. And the first 5 spots were free. And 20 or 25 people ended up wanting in. So the name of the course actually was the joke, and it's called How to Be Annoying and Sell a Ton of Stuff Anyway, which is, if you know anything about online marketing and digital marketers, you might resonate with that. Like people can be very annoying and yet they sell stuff anyway, which is mind blowing to me. And it's because they follow simple principles, simple formulas. And my goal in the course is that business owners and entrepreneurs can go through it and turn their own sort of mediocre copywriting into not necessarily annoying copywriting, but copywriting that sells. Okay, so I teach you the 80-20 of copywriting over the course of 4 lessons, all the way from, you know, before writing a single word of your copy, all the way to the end of like, okay, hit post on this the sales page or hit send on this email and let the sales roll in.
Yeah. So awesome. And for those that are listening, you can head over right now to unconventionallifeshow.com to enter for that giveaway. And Eric, for anyone else that's listening that, you know, wants to follow your stuff, wants to get in on that course, just wants to connect with you, that might have questions, where should they do that? How can they learn more about you and stay in touch?
I'd say the best way is to find me on Facebook. I think my URL is eric.finnegan.7. I'm not totally sure. Just search Eric Finnegan. Or you can check out my autopilot email website. It's just autopilotemail.com and see what my professional marketing agency website looks like.
Yeah. Love that. Awesome. Well, Eric, thank you so much for taking the time with all of our listeners. Unconventional Life Tribe, thanks for tuning in. Another awesome episode. We will talk to you next time.
If you would like to win this week's prize giveaway from our show guests featuring free access to their online courses, books, and other impactful tools to help you on the path to living an unconventional life, simply subscribe to the podcast on iTunes now and go to unconventionallifeshow.com to let us know you did. You can also get a second entry by leaving us an iTunes review.